Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It was an old bit of history that made national headlines after the 2012 killing of Trayvon Martin in Florida. Stand your ground, a doctrine of self-defense allowing armed citizens to confront intruders on their property, depending on reasonable expectations of threat. It can be traced back to colonial times. But what is considered reasonable varies in the almost half of U.S. states that have such laws. The notion of reasonable can be further adjusted by a jury in court, and that's at the heart of a hearing that's begun in Tampa this week. In Florida, the Stand Your Ground law allows people to use deadly force when they fear death or great bodily harm. But a police captain, Curtis Reeves, shot a citizen in a movie theater in 2014 and claims he was acting in self-defense. The hearing will determine if he stands trial for second-degree murder or if he's cleared. Harvard researcher Caroline Light says Stand Your Ground is the sometimes violent legal offspring of two even older doctrines, a duty to retreat and a man's home is his castle, where you can shoot first and ask questions later. Caroline says, as firearms have proliferated, lawmakers are faced with the challenge of making rules for when gunfire breaks out between the most privileged people in the U.S. and the most vulnerable members of society. Caroline Light is director of undergraduate studies at the Harvard Program for Women, Gender, and Sexuality. Her new book is called Stand Your Ground, A History of America's Love Affair with Lethal Self-Defense. Welcome, Caroline, and where did this term Stand Your Ground come from?
I would say probably 19th century is when courts started using that term, a man may stand his ground rather than retreat from a threat.
Always a man.
Usually a man, usually a white man, even though they didn't always explicitly state that. But stand your ground is at odds with the ages-old duty to retreat. That was entrenched in English common law from which United States law is derived. And the rule was that if you were threatened, you weren't allowed to fight back with lethal violence until you first tried to get away.
I mean, I remember in the mid-20th century that there were cases where people would come upon somebody's home and they would use a gun. And the discussion was, first of all, whoa, why would you do such a thing? And, you know, an innocent person comes along on your property. You know, the fact that you would shoot them is outrageous. The
right.
Expectation that anyone would have a gun at their front door was just a real fringe kind of scenario.
Right. Well, a lot of this has to do with the castle doctrine and the idea that the exception to the duty to retreat is that if you're in your house and you feel yourself to be threatened, then in many jurisdictions, you're allowed to shoot first, ask questions later, because it's your house. And your house is your castle. So in the United States, the castle doctrine, especially early republic through the 19th century, was very much about white men protecting their home and property.
How has that tracked parallel with the evolution of the way we view firearms and the expectation that people will actually be carrying firearms, whether they're at home or wandering around the streets?
I would say they're very much parallel. And it does seem when you look at it that it's somewhat ironic on one hand that in some jurisdictions you're supposed to consider everybody armed. All law-abiding citizens should be armed, as it is presumed in many of the constitutional carry states. Those are the states that have permitless carry. Essentially, civilians can carry concealed firearms as long as they're law-abiding citizens without any training. And many jurisdictions, I mentioned before, 33 states have some version of a stand your ground law. These are, you know, basically the idea is that civilians should take upon themselves their own security and safety. And certainly this is amplified when you have circumstances in which people feel themselves to be under threat, whether it's by terrorists or by this notion of criminality run rampant. And a lot of this happens in spite of documented declines in crime. So since
Right.
the 1970s, we've seen a decline in crime, but also since the 1970s, we've seen a shift away from gun ownership for hunting and more towards gun ownership as self-protection.
In the castle, that is supposedly protected by the man's gun or weapon, whatever. If a woman was in fear of her life for domestic violence reasons, there was, in fact, explicitly no right to do anything to protect herself.
Right. And this has been an ongoing problem, is that even in stand your ground states, many women who try to stand their ground against abusive intimate partners end up going to prison, even if they don't end up killing. I'm sure you're familiar with the Marissa Alexander case. She's a woman from Florida who was recently released from house arrest. She shot warning shots to protect herself from her abusive spouse. And she was imprisoned. She was found guilty of use of a deadly weapon. And essentially, she tried to claim self-defense, but the law and jury saw her as not being afraid or not being reasonably afraid of her abusive spouse. They saw her as angry. This has a lot to do with race as well as gender. As a Black woman, the law tends to express its implicit biases against Black women by characterizing them as unreasonable in claiming fear. And reasonable, the idea of reasonable in criminal law is really vital. And if the jury can't imagine you as being reasonably afraid, you're not going to get acquitted under stand your ground. And if you look at the cases, white property owning, typically men, end up doing pretty well. It, for instance, George Zimmerman claiming self-defense against an unarmed Black teenager, Trayvon Martin. The stand your ground laws, I think, amplify pre-existing racial and gender kinds of inequalities in the way that the law gets adjudicated. A recent study came out showing that in Florida, since 2005, when that first stand your ground law was instantiated, homicides have increased by over 30%. Mm. So what does that mean? That means that I think stand your ground laws contribute to this frame of mind that you should shoot first and ask questions later.
Carolyn Light is director of undergraduate studies at the Harvard Program for Women, Gender, and Sexuality. Her new book is titled Stand Your Ground, A History of America's Love Affair with Lethal Self-Defense. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.